Shadows on the Ice, Part 2. I nodded my head and hurried back the way we came without a moment's thought. The trip back felt quick, and I could feel eyes watching us from the shadows, waiting for the next chance to strike again. But I ignored them, trying to keep the hot image of Earl's head out of my eyelids while snow pricked at my face. None of us said a word to each other when we got back. We slept fitfully that night, and Ricky woke several times from downstairs where he slept by the fireside. Neither Mason or I blamed him when we would come racing down, just in case the screams were more than nightmares. In the morning, none of us felt eager for breakfast, though we did out of concern for our health and warmth. As the temperatures were plummeting faster than ever, we discussed what happened and came to the conclusion that there could, but only be one culprit for the murder of our friend. Wolves. In clear hindsight, it was foolish for us to do so, but we became enraged at his attack, blubbering and foaming at the mouth for retribution, and it was for this reason that we set off into the snow-covered woods that day, for we sought vengeance. There was nothing spectacular to say about the excursion other than that the tracks and blood had been completely covered by the snow, though we could feel a tension in the air pricking the backs of our necks. It was not until nightfall that we found Earl's body, with only a finger peeking out of the snow. We had gone in circles all day searching desperately for our memories for clues as to his whereabouts, and when we did find him, Ricky took out a bright red rag and hung it from a tree branch, should we need to return to the spot later and find Earl completely submerged. Though we'd cleared the snow around his naked body, we headed east, and as we knew we could not be south, we had come from that direction, nor west, as that was where the cabin was, and to the north, where the plains and the frozen pond were. The snow whipped at our faces as we blundered through the snow, and the deeper into the woods we went, the more skeletal and twisted the trees became, seeming to become frightful figures leering at us, plotting our demise. The terrain grew hilly, but though our feet were worn and sore, we persisted, fueled by a blinding rage. It was late into the night when we found the wolf's den. It was nestled under an overhang in the side of a hill, with roots spreading their fingers over the walls and the floor of the enclave, with bones and carcass strewn about. At first, I took them to be shadows in the dark, but Mason was the one to notice their oddity. "Are they sleeping?" he stammered. I squinted my eyes and shook my head. "Believe so," whispered Ricky. "They should be hunting right now, so that's odd." I lowered my gun and tested the branch of a nearby tree. "I don't give a flying damn," I growled as I began to ascend up the tree. "I'm going to kill every last one of them if it's the last thing I do." They agreed and took positions in opposite trees so that we could circle the sleeping wolves. I told them to wait for me to take the first shot and to keep shooting after that cue. I sighed and tried to relax my shoulders, but to no avail. My blood was boiling and my fingers were itching to spill blood. I lined up the scope and looked for the biggest one. There he was, right next to the bones of a rabbit. I fired. The silent air exploded with gunshots and yowls and yelps as we fired on the unsuspecting beasts, their blood staining the crystalline snow. We killed about three of them and wounded two others, though they escaped deeper into the hills along with another one who left uninjured. Easy. When we eased to the den to inspect the damage, Ricky gave a gasp of surprise as he inspected the walls of the inlet, the smell of flesh pungent. "Do you guys see this? There's drawings on the walls." We shined our flashlights to meet his and saw what appeared to be Native American symbols and writings written on the walls of the earth, depicting crude interpretations of owls, wolves, and other animals I wasn't quite sure the nature of. Though it seemed to be feline in nature, looking up, I saw there were feathers and other decorated trinkets hanging from the ceiling. "I thought nobody lived out here," I breathed. I tore one of the trinkets off and inspected it, talons from what appeared to be an owl, and I threw them down and left the den without a word, heading in the direction the wolves had escaped. None of us said anything as we searched for the wolves. We seemed to be perfectly tuned in with each other as we traipsed into the night, though. The sky glowed redder than ever, casting angry hues over the land. I thought it was odd that this phenomenon should be occurring so frequently, but my mind was elsewhere. I wanted to only kill these three beasts. We eventually, after a grueling struggle through the snow, which was picking up despite the skies being clear, found the first of the injured wolves. Whimpering and licking its wounds, we killed it and found the next wolf, an older cub, not far ahead. It was as we were searching for the third wolf, the one who'd escaped uninjured, that we felt it. It was subtle at first, but soon there was a kind of electric static in the air, making our hair frizz and cling to our faces. The red sky blackened with clouds, and the snowfall grew into a blizzard. We had not been speaking before, but now we didn't dare to. We could all feel it. An owl cried from above, and I saw what looked to be a mangy animal slipping off into the bushes, yellow eyes glaring at us for a few moments before disappearing. "Was that a cougar?" Ricky hissed under his breath. I nodded and swallowed. "I thought those were supposed to be further east," Mason mumbled. I put my finger to my lips and scanned the trees around us. Though the snow was heavier than ever, I felt as though we were in the eye of a storm. We waited. We waited for an eternity in that windy silence. We knew not where we were waiting for, but we knew whatever it was something to be feared. Mason had moved to make a run for it, but I grabbed him by the shoulder, not wanting to alert whatever was out there of our presence. Perhaps 10 minutes had gone by. Us planted in the cold ground, eyes raw and wet, when we heard the beasts. They howled. "No," roared from a nearby, deafening bellow that demanded flesh, and it came from all around us. Ricky bolted, racing faster than I could ever imagine him running by the way he came, but Mason was on his tail, and I knew that I had to better follow suit. I could hear them trampling in the snow behind us, monstrous beasts snarling and stampeding after us. Blood pumped and rang in my ears, but my legs were numb, and I was perpetually urging them onwards, praying hard that not one tremble or slip would happen. The snow to the sides of us erupted, and I could see shadowy behemoths racing alongside, though I could not get a good look at them, nor did I try. My eyes were focused ahead, and my mind was fitted with a single purpose: to flee. They bellowed and howled, their noises ungodly and bone-shattering. Ahead, I could see the den with the dead wolves. As though in slow motion, Ricky tipped over one of the carcasses and screamed. Neither I or Mason paused in our tracks. We could not afford a moment's hesitation, lest those shadowy beasts come upon us, and we left Ricky behind. The sounds of his screams and breaking bones followed our ears until they ended with ghostly suddenness. I don't know how we managed to get back to the cabin. Those creatures could have killed us with ease at any point in the race home, but I didn't care, for the sight of the cabin felt like a godsend, and Mason and I barreled through the door and locked it tight. The moment we came inside, the air grew silent again, and the static seemed to disappear. Without a word, we went to the other doors and locked them, and then closed the shutters on all the windows in the house. Mason threw some heavy furniture in front of the doors while I relit the fire, eager to get rid of the cold biting at my flesh. "What the fuck just happened?" Mason croaked. "What were those things?" "I don't know, but we need to leave as soon as possible, though we should probably wait until morning. I don't want to go out again there when it's still dark out." Mason agreed, and we packed our things, after which we sat by the fire with our rifles in our laps and our pistols loaded on the coffee table. We listened intently to the night, not daring to sleep, and at one point Mason began to doze off, but I made him and myself coffee to open our eyes. Around 3 in the morning, we were jolted by a din of screeching metal from outside. Fearing the worst, we ran upstairs and peered out the windows. Mason cleared frost from the window and cursed under his breath. What? What is it? Just come look. Nervously, I approached the window and peered out towards the truck. Fucking Christ. From what I could tell, the front of it had been ripped up with shredded metal protruding like gnarled teeth. I scanned the area for the beast but couldn't see nothing, not even tracks in the snow. Should we go out now or wait till morning? He asked, his eyes scanning the other windows rapidly. Definitely morning, I answered. I didn't want either of us to end up like Earl or Ricky. Mason nodded his head, and we went back downstairs and escaped to the warmth of the fire.